everyone. Here is 2021 and also episode 3 of season 2 of Medicine in Motion podcast, where we talk about movement as medicine. From prevention and management in health and disease, physical activity plays a significant role. This season, we are focusing on physical activity in the context of the COVID-19 pandemic, and we'll be exploring a range of topics that will address the what, how, and why of keeping physically active during these times.
My name is Swapna.
And I'm Mackenzie.
And we are MD, PhD, and PhD candidates from the University of Toronto. And in this episode, we explore the intersection of policy and physical activity during the pandemic. We're focusing on the decision-making process for policies and public health measures here where we are centered in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, and how policymakers balance the decisions for restrictions to outdoor and indoor recreational exercise environments, such as gyms, studios, and workout spaces, with the need to stop the spread of this deadly virus.
We are excited to host our esteemed guest today, Eric Thompson, who is a Senior Policy and Strategic Issues Advisor at Toronto Public Health. Eric is able to speak to some of the decision-making around active TO and is currently part of the team responsible for the COVID-19 vaccine rollout at Toronto Public Health. If you have any questions along the way, please either post them in the forum or comments so we can share them in the audience Q&A period. We are thrilled to welcome Eric Thompson.
Hi, Swapna. Hi, Mac. How are you doing?
We're doing good. Thanks. And Eric, we understand that you are super busy these days with the vaccine rollout, but how are you staying active during the pandemic?
Yeah, it's a tough one that I think most people, especially in the city of Toronto, being so dense, we don't have a lot of space. And myself, you know, I live in an apartment, and it's been an adjustment. Everyone's used to the privilege of going to a gym. And that's been, on and off for the past nearly year now. So I completely empathize with people who have had to make that adjustment. I've had to as well. Luckily, this happened in 2020 and not 1995 before internet. And, there's a lot of home workouts available. Been able to kind of make use of my few hundred square feet or so. Also, I just had a habit of, over the past few years, instead of resenting Canadian winter, trying to get out for a hike with my dog. So he's my quarantine companion, and we go for hikes locally in Toronto. It's a good excuse year round, and even in the winter, to see the city's trails and parks. So that's been part of how I'm staying active.
That's lovely. And I'm betting that your dog is very happy that you're staying home a lot more.
He's thrilled. I don't know how he's going to ever get used to things going back to normal when they do.
It's good to hear that you're able to stay active. And the home workouts have featured quite a lot in my workout routine now as well. So that's definitely a good one.
Mm-hmm.
Eric, just to bring our audience up to speed, what is your specific role at Toronto Public Health?
Sure. So as you mentioned, I'm a policy advisor, so a senior policy advisor, and also take on strategic issues. So a big part of my role is to support our senior management. That includes Medical Officer of Health, Dr. Eileen Davila, Toronto Public Health. And usually in peacetime, it's just a matter of providing strategic advice and policy development to senior management as we support the Board of Health, which is our oversight body at our public health unit, as well as City Council, and strategic engagement with other levels of government, provincial, federal, other local governments, and other stakeholders. Now, though, in the COVID-19 response that I've been a part of since February, things have become predominantly about the response to the pandemic, but some critical public health programs still continue, and so still provide strategic policy advice on those. But it's predominantly about the pandemic response. So my role is to work with an excellent team that is dedicated to nimbly move around depending on issues that are ongoing or upcoming, that we're anticipating in the policy development process, as well as liaising with key stakeholders to make sure that their input is considered that communities' considerations are understood. Social demographic data is taken into account, and that everything is thought through with a health equity lens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a very important aspect of it, with the health equity lens that you speak of. And it sounds like your team is very interdisciplinary, with a lot of communication going on between all the moving parts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've had to adapt. I mean, this is new for everyone from a policy perspective as well. But a lot of the mechanisms are still in place for policy development, the stakeholder consideration, and as you mentioned, the health equity lens, something that's a cornerstone of public health, that continues as much as always.
And just taking a deeper dive into what we're talking about, typically, what do the general steps in the decision-making process at Toronto Public Health look like in terms of when you're deciding on what restrictions are going to be in play or what public health measures in general are going to be recommended? And I'm talking about from evidence gathering to decision-making to the point of where you're spreading the message to the public. What does that look like?
Right. Yeah, it's the whole policy development process is complicated by the pandemic, but it's still about the same as it was when it came to policy beforehand. But the unique nature of this being a novel virus is that even now, nearly over a year later, since the genome was sequenced, we're still learning so much about it. And so the evidence that's been coming in, as it's come in to not just local public health to consider, but provincial, federal governments, other countries' governments, have had to be made with incomplete information and often with enormous consequences, whether those are externalities negatively or positive ones that we intend, as well as ones that we maybe didn't expect. So the challenge of the policy development in the pandemic has been operating in somewhat of a fog of war at the beginning, and still to a certain extent, especially with new variables like a mutant variant, for example, now emerging in Canada. So I'll take a step back and say that the evidence we were able to gather at the beginning, luckily to some extent, in Canada, we were behind other jurisdictions such as Northern Italy, Wuhan, of course, but Northern Italy, New York City, and similar jurisdictions that had to respond with measures before we did. And so we were able to always be doing jurisdictional scans to look at what other cities were doing before we absolutely already had to make the decision when it came to the larger public health measures. But to be clear, as a local public health unit, we do have authority to pass regulations through the Health Protection and Promotion Act. That is specifically that our medical officer of health can, for example, put forward a Section 22 order, which Dr. Davila did in the fall, as well as beforehand for people to isolate who have COVID-19 or are awaiting a test result. But to be very clear, it's the provincial government that has the majority of the legal and regulatory oversight over the pandemic response. And so the decision-making, for example, when it comes to restrictions in the city of Toronto, are mostly determined by the province. And we're speaking now on January 13th, new restrictions were announced yesterday, and they're coming into force Thursday on the 14th. This has been going on since March, when the first emergency order was declared by the province. So not speaking on behalf of the province, but the restrictions that they had to consider, the evidence that they gathered, we go through the same process in our decision-making. We just don't have the final say of what would be in the Reopening Ontario Act, for example, and the restrictions in there. But in terms of how those decisions are made, who would be made by our medical officer of health in consultation with our board of health, and sometimes with the mayor of our city making the final decision, is that evidence is gathered widely, stakeholders are consulted, a situational assessment, a rigorous situational assessment is done, which includes in-house modeling, analysis, health equity considerations, data from our case and contact management, so many different sources that are brought together, collated, and considered, which are then brought forward often as advice from our medical officer of health. So it's, I think everyone in the province is feeling the challenges of understanding what are the restrictions at any given time as they fluctuate. And so, of course, there's also some challenges in understanding who makes those decisions. And but between the levels of government, there is that rigorous situational assessment that's conducted.
Thanks for clarifying that process, because there's a lot of parts to that. And we were also curious about where the evidence is sourced from, but you also mentioned some of those places, including some of the in-house modeling that happens at Toronto Public Health. So we also wanted to know, you mentioned the stakeholders that are consulted. Do you consult with external advisors, per se, who are experts in perhaps viral infection or pandemics or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, I not personally do I engage at that that level with, say, other epidemiologists, but our public health unit, the leadership is in constant discussion with council of other medical officers of health, 34 public health units in Ontario, and they share information, best practices, and lessons learned from different decisions that they've already made or are considering making. When it comes to the data and epidemiology, that's something that we do have in-house as expertise, but whether it's institutions like the University of Toronto and their modelers, some that are part of the provincial task force, we take into consideration all of the rigorous analysis that they put forward, and there are several tables at the provincial level that our medical officer of health and our leadership is part of. And so that dialogue is ongoing with our provincial counterparts.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. Sounds like such a robust process.
Yeah, it's been interesting to watch the incident management system, which is, a kind of emergency management structure, best practice in North America, take shape in the spring and just, quickly get building the airplane as you're flying it seems. I wasn't obviously part of that, but being brought into that system, there were already structures in place that could be quickly assembled if needed, and yes, they are quite robust.
And I know you brought up a lot of different vantage points that the decisions are made, and I was wondering if you're able to speak on any of the decisions specific with physical activity during the pandemic and what this process kind of looked like with the decision-making process at Toronto Public Health.
Yeah, so around physical activity, it's something that of course is essential. And I think too often it's given the perspective by some that it's an afterthought in when it comes to policymaking, but it's not. It's something that's considered very highly by public health officials who have long championed physical activity and the value of exercise for public health. It just so happens that certain forms of exercise and physical activity now can have serious health consequences during the pandemic, whether that's person-to-person transmission or an outbreak in a facility that people exercise together with. So because there are ways for people to get exercise, physical activity in a safe way, then it's not to downplay the benefit of places like gyms or fitness centers, but to understand that because of the risk involved in some of those group situations, if people are able to exercise at home, which many have been able to adapt to, go for walks in the city, go to parks, even go to skating rinks, there are ways around to adapt and to still have safe physical activity. And because the safety and health of Torontonians is the utmost priority, then unfortunately there is some trade-off that group fitness and gyms, for example, is not advised, and the province has had it so that gyms are closed now for that reason. But the city of Toronto has done a lot to ensure that people have access to adequate physical activity space, whether that's tobogganing hills, skating rinks, clearing paths for people to go walking on in our parks. All of the parks that we have, the gym equipment in parks is available. These are all things that public health officials are encouraging, even during our strict lockdown, is to get some exercise, but with the understanding, with the advice that you should not be doing this with people outside of your household. If you live alone, you may join up with one other household to exercise outdoors, go for a walk, ideally distanced and masked if possible, and to get some physical activity that way for both physical and mental health reasons.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And as you said, our understanding of this virus is evolving over time. And I guess with that, has the consideration for physical activity kind of evolved as the pandemic has progressed? Has it taken a higher priority or has that changed in the decision-making process?
Not something that is explicitly, to my understanding, weighed in itself as a quantitative measurement of importance. After adding and subtracting benefits and trade-offs, do we end up on the positive or negative side of the ledger? It's more about at any single time in the pandemic, there's a snapshot of what the state of the outbreak in the city is. And so my understanding is that decisions are made on the snapshot of what we're seeing, what we've learned, and what modelers are projecting could happen if certain behaviors are allowed or continue. So there's a tendency, I think, to think back to a certain time in the pandemic and say, this was allowed then, why isn't it allowed now? Because there are so many factors that are considered, then it can be a challenge sometimes to point to a time in the pandemic when something was allowed for physical activity, because there are so many factors that were considered for that decision, and why it may not be allowed now, when those variables have all shifted in different ways. And that could be the virus itself, or it could be the advice from other levels of government or weather conditions, so many different variables that may impact that decision.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And yeah, I understand that question could have been taken a few different ways. And thank you so much for explaining the decision and sort of the interpretation of exercise in both regards with that.
Mm-hmm. And it does make sense that as evidence changes, the recommendations do change. And that kind of brings us to the next question, which is, what are the current recommendations of Toronto Public Health about exercise and physical activity, be that indoors or outdoors? And are there particular, I suppose, considerations or specific recommendations for populations that might have trouble accessing spaces for exercise or resources for exercise at their baseline, like the senior population of Toronto or low socioeconomic status folks?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. It's exercise or physical activity is not the same. It doesn't mean the same to all. And accessibility is for sure a key component of that. To back up and speak to the advice that Toronto Public Health has about physical activity during the pandemic, as mentioned earlier, if you're able to stay home and exercise, within your living space, within only, if you're around other people, it's only those that you live with, that you already have regular contact with, then that is ideal. Of course, we do need fresh air. And so going for a walk, a local hike in the city's parks alone, that's ideal as well. Understanding though that people who are living alone, it can be very hard on them compared to others who live with roommates or family, that the isolation and the mental health aspects could be quite detrimental. And so Toronto Public Health and the provincial government, even including with the new restrictions that were announced, still allow for someone, say, who lives alone to go for a walk and to be on a walk with someone else in the city's park, even, you know, just as long as that is the same household day to day, right? If you're meeting up with one household one day, the advice isn't that, okay, you can then get together with a different household another day just because it's a single household. The idea is that you would have this exclusive other household, ideally, you know, one other person that you can get together with for a hike. But the advice doesn't just limit that. The virus will say, you know, we'll consider, oh, well, they're allowed to get together because of this. There's still a risk of transmission, even within this exclusive household bubble, even if, you know, the decision was made in consideration of mental health. The virus, unfortunately, doesn't care about that. So ideally, what I do, I live alone. So if I go out for a walk with an exclusive household I'm engaged with, then we still wear masks outdoors. I mean, in the winter, it's like wearing a ski mask anyway. So it helps with this wind chill, but still wear a mask outdoors. It doesn't make a difference to me. And it adds a layer of protection. Still keep my distance, as does the other person. And I find that that's, enough engagement and still being able to have physical activity just at a distance of 6 feet going for that walk doesn't really take too much away, but gives me peace of mind that I'm exercising in a safe way. And so that's the advice in terms of how to do it and then where to do it. The city has put together a lot of effort to give spaces for people to go to parks, skating rinks. You can even go to, you know, a basketball court if you're able to in the winter, toboggan hills, and understanding that not everyone has green space. Not everyone has a backyard for that private space to spend time outside for fresh air. The park system in the city of Toronto is very extensive, and we do encourage all those who are able to access that space to do so. As for seniors or others who may have accessibility issues to go into city parks, for example, there are resources on Toronto Public Health's website for seniors and other folks who are looking for ways for supports, including for physical activity. And we encourage residents to take a look at those resources on our website, as well as to see, you know, resources that the province is offering and even local community groups who are doing their best to support communities at this time.
Amazing. Yeah, I know you mentioned tobogganing as well as some of the skating programs that obviously Mayor John Tory has remarked on the importance of keeping these facilities open and available throughout the city for citizens to engage in physical activity. I know you can only comment on kind of what the plan is presently, but do we think that maybe these facilities and services such as skating rinks and public trails, will they likely still be accessible throughout the winter?
Yeah, it's not something that I don't know what the future will hold. I do know that there is still some uncertainty as of today, January 13th, around how the new restrictions that have come in this week at the provincial level may impact skating rinks. So we do know that Social gatherings outdoors have been limited now to 5 people, down from 10. And the way the wording is, it's not quite clear yet if that applies to something like a skating rink where the current limit is 25 people. So we don't know yet, but that would be something that may be affected by the new regulations, but we're just about to get confirmation from the province on skating rinks. As for trails, my understanding is that since the beginning of the response, that city trails themselves haven't been closed. And so they are like, they may remain open. That may change, but either way, if the idea is to stay home whenever possible, and if seeking some exercise outdoors, some fresh air, then something like a city trail, especially by yourself or if you live alone, then with someone else from another exclusive household to exercise with.
Mm-hmm. And we just have a few more questions as we wind this chat down, but we were wondering if you can describe what ACTIVE-TO is, a specific program in Toronto, and what maybe some examples of the opportunities that it offers to citizens of Toronto.
Mm-hmm, yeah, gladly. ACTIVE-TO, it began in May this past year and ended in October because of winter conditions, but it was a City of Toronto program that, or initiative that had a quiet streets component, as well as expanding the bike network and increasing walking space, cycling space for pedestrians. And so on weekends, the quiet streets initiative included major thoroughfares that would be closed down and traffic would be redirected so that either only local traffic could use the streets, or the streets would be just for pedestrians, cyclists, people with rollerblades, and so on. And it was very much used by residents, which is great to see. People enjoying the outdoors safely and with more space on large streets. And so that's something that was helpful to many residents to ensure they weren't too close on sidewalks, that they could get to other destinations using street space, road space. And so that, we're actually going to be able to see, I believe at the end of this month, council will be bringing forward a report on ACTIVE-TO that will include traffic analysis from the summer months, and to see what type of uptake there was with the initiative, what type of pedestrian traffic there was, and some of the analysis of what that could mean for continuing the program possibly in the future and its benefits. And so, yeah, we're very much looking forward to seeing the outcome of that report.
We look forward to seeing the results of that report too. Thanks for sharing that.
Mm-hmm. And the Lakeshore close-off for just cyclists, that was an example of it, correct? At the beginning of the lockdown?
That's right. Yeah. Seeing all of Lakeshore West there being closed off, and with so many pedestrians and cyclists took advantage of that.
Mm-hmm. There is an expansion of some of the bike lanes. Is that an example that was also used by ACTIVE-TO? There's quite a few new bike lanes built over the winter and over the lockdown.
Yeah. The bike lanes, were something that have been there's been an expansion ongoing for years, but it was continuously considered depending on the neighborhood or community, and that was still the case in the spring and summer months when it was decided to be expanded. But elected officials, councillors decided that this was an important time to expand the bike network and to increase safe lanes for cyclists in Toronto, and keeping in line with Vision Zero. And so that's been a welcome addition to city infrastructure.
That's good to know. And thank you so much for sharing all of that, from the decision-making process and the recommendations to what's possible now and what the recommendations are now, we're going to turn it over to the audience and ask a couple of their questions before wrapping this all up. And the first audience question that we were given, thank you, by the way, to the audience for sharing your questions, is what are the recommendations and rules about wearing masks outside? So you mentioned a little bit about how you do that. Are there particular recommendations for all of us regarding masks?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so not speaking on behalf of the province, but my understanding is that provincial regulations around wearing a mask outdoors as per the Reopening Ontario Act, is that you must wear a mask if you are lining up, for example, outside of a grocery store. If you're waiting in line and you're 6 feet apart, you still need to wear a mask in that line. Otherwise, there was a recommendation announced yesterday about people who are wearing masks out to advise people in Ontario to wear a mask outdoors if they're unable to keep distance from someone 6 feet or so. Personally, what I do, I have to come, out of my apartment unit, down the elevator, through my lobby with a mask anyway. That's a city bylaw. It's already on, and I just keep it on for the rest of the time that I'm walking outdoors. I'm walking on a busy set. Even if it's not busy at any time, there could be one other pedestrian coming my way that may not be able to keep 6 feet of distance. It's just a personal practice to keep the mask on at all times. But again, yeah, in terms of what's mandatory, it's only waiting in line outside of a store when you're outside, as well as if you can't keep distance from someone else on a city street, for example.
So that's regardless of if you're doing physical activity or just your regular going out and about for groceries and whatnot.
I'm not sure if the province has distinguished for those who are, like, say, a cyclist or someone jogging, but I think that those broad parameters may still apply. And yeah, if you're within a distance of someone of 6 feet when you're exercising, you should be wearing a mask.
Amazing. Yeah, and we've noticed more people downtown Toronto walking on the streets are wearing masks. So I think people are doing this out of their own precaution as well, which is a good thing, and kind of just shows the sort of strength of the city and the people, which I think is great. The next audience question is, what tips do you have or are made available for talking to vaccine hesitant loved ones?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I can say first off that I don't have a medical background. I'm not a not a medical professional. And so it's anything that I'm saying is not medical advice, but my understanding of this issue comes from the different reasons why people may be vaccine hesitant, and they vary. So they could be because of possibly information or disinformation that they have heard, whether online or from their family or friends, as well as other concerns that, maybe from interpreting information that is valid or that comes from advice from governments. For example, if someone who is immunocompromised is hesitant to be vaccinated, that hesitation may come from because the government has said, the provincial government has said at one point that because of people with those who are immunocompromised not being included in the clinical trials, that that may not be advised for such populations to get the vaccine. So that advice has since changed, including for pregnant and breastfeeding women, that it should be in consultation with your doctor and having a case-by-case discussion with a primary healthcare practitioner. In terms of what I may say to someone who just wants to know more and has questions or may be hesitant and is looking to learn more, what I tell them is that, like any other vaccine that they've received in Canada, It's been evaluated and approved through rigorous evaluation from Health Canada, our federal drug and vaccine regulator, world-class regulator, and that it's safe and effective. Those are the standards that are set by Health Canada before approving a vaccine, and that they went through the same rigorous considerations as any other vaccine. Sometimes people may follow up with the question of saying, this happened quite quickly, and I've heard it's a medical miracle that, you know, we have vaccines in hand a year after sequencing the virus. You know, what does that mean? Is that, did we do this quickly? And what I say to them is that this unprecedented speed came from the enormous amount of financial investment from governments to invest in companies that were developing a vaccine. There's global networks of teams who are working on this massive first, third, and second priority in global health. And also the information was shared with regulators like Health Canada as it came in. And sometimes that isn't shared until each stage of the clinical trial process is complete, because there could be financial reasons for not continuing trials. But because there was this investment up front and companies, pharmaceutical companies, were told to provide this information as they were getting it, that it would be evaluated as they're getting it and the financial security would be there. My understanding is that that process was just compressed, but did not miss or skip any of the safety and efficacy safeguards that are standard in the Health Canada regulation process. That's the, I suppose, more scientific side of addressing vaccine hesitancy, but understanding that that explanation is verbose and technical. And so I'd say that people should speak to their doctor. They should ask the questions that they have and any concerns that they have. Be sure to speak to, you know, trusted medical professionals, whether it's in your own local communities that you have established relationships with, and rely on their advice for the COVID-19 vaccine.
That's some really great advice and great insights. And that was the last question. So now we'd like to say thank you so much to our wonderful guest, Eric Thompson, for providing an overview of the decision-making process and a lot of other insight at Toronto Public Health. Thanks, Eric.
Thank you, Swapna. Thank you, Mac. I really appreciate you having me on to discuss this.
We appreciate having you. Yes, it's been really great to hear from you and learn all the things about Toronto Public Health and to keep up to date with the newest changes to public health recommendations from Toronto Public Health. You can follow at TO Public Health on Twitter. And thank you, of course, to you, our audience, for your questions that made for quite an engaging discussion.
If you'd like to continue the discussion, please head over to our website, medicineinmotionpodcast.ca/live, and check out our discussion forum. If you'd like to listen to this episode again or share it with your friends or family, you can find a recording of today's conversation in podcast format by searching Medicine in Motion on iTunes, Spotify, and Google Podcasts.
Thanks for tuning in. As always, we love to hear what you think. Find us on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube at Medicine in Motion Podcast, and connect, follow, like, and subscribe. Until next time, remember,
exercise is the best medicine. As Eric mentioned on our call, Ontario is tightening regulations in an effort to halt the spread of this contagious virus, according to the advice provided by the Chief Medical Officer of Health's statement at Ontario.ca. Trips outside of the home should be limited and only for essential purposes, under which exercise alone or with people in your household and in the community where you live is listed. And moments before our chat with Eric, Dr. Eileen Davila provided an update to Torontonians.
During the subsequent question and answer period, she emphasized the importance of exercise and physical activity in this balance.
Staying home to the greatest extent possible is obviously a part of that. But we're trying to preserve health. I think this is an effort across all levels of government that health is more than just about COVID-19, and exercise and getting outdoors is part of that. So I think this is just a reflection of trying to strike that appropriate balance, as has been the case throughout the entire pandemic.
Our takeaway from this is that physical activity is considered essential, as it is important for both physical and mental health. And we can all pitch in to help stop the spread of COVID-19 by keeping distance and avoiding non-essential trips outside. Therefore, we can continue to exercise in modified and safe ways, as Eric shared from recommendations from Toronto Public Health.
This episode of Medicine in Motion podcast was made possible by the generous contributions provided by the Rising Youth Grant.